Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Lucas McCurdy and Joshua Crisp, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors, powered by Marcentum.
All right, welcome back to another Bridge the Gap podcast. We are here at the EFA conference, and it's an exciting time. We just got here this morning, and we're meeting a bunch of new people. Josh, I think you came in yesterday from Knoxville, right?
I did, and this is my first EFA conference. As an operator, we don't come to these too often, so this is really great, a whole different group of people. And for those listeners or those watching on YouTube, if you don't know what EFA is, it's Environments for Aging. And so this is a conference, an expo that they do in beautiful Savannah. We're actually here, and I know you can't see this, but we have a beautiful view, natural light, so very appropriate for Environments on Aging. And so excited to be here. It's great.
Exciting time. I mean, there's a ton of designers, and the topics are all centered around basically how do we help the end user, which is our aging population, live life with dignity and live in communities that are beautiful and safe and are complementary to their needs. And so there's a lot of experts here talking about that topic, and we're super fortunate to have our distinguished guest here, an author, activist, an expert on ageism. And so we want to welcome Ashton Applewhite. Ashton, thank you so much for being here with us.
My pleasure.
And so you were the keynote this morning. And so I have to admit that I got up very early this morning. I drove from Orlando, Florida. So I got up at 2:30 this morning. Whoa. And you woke me up.
No bigger compliment.
You woke me up big time, not only with the seemingly taboo topics, but also your graphics, and really got our attention. And I could tell by the crowd that it was very well received. And just a lot of topics that I think are very important that need to be talked about. Josh is an operator in the space. And I know that once you were finished, you made some comments just that, hey, you know, these are conversations that we need to be having, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, I think what you referenced, Lucas, is some of the slides. As I was just walking down the hall with you, you know, people are saying, oh, I like the sex slide, you know, and that, you know, that's, I think everybody enjoyed that, but it was also kind of, you know, it makes you, does it make you uncomfortable? Should it make you uncomfortable?
Sure.
And so I love that. And I love that you're here talking about things that stimulate us to think about things a little bit differently. And I love that you gave us your perspective on that. So maybe give us a little bit of your background for those that maybe aren't familiar with your work. We'll talk about your book a little bit later. But tell us your background and your journey from, you know, where you began to like right now.
Well, I am a generalist. And as I confess right up front in the talk, I started writing about aging because I was afraid of it. It started as a project about older people who work, and in 5 minutes I learned, so, you know, researching longevity, all this information is totally available in books and on the web in 2 seconds. It's not that I'm some brilliant researcher, that almost everything I thought I knew about aging was way too negative, way too black and white, or just flat out totally wrong. So I became obsessed with wondering why we don't know these things. I mean, you know, for example, I assumed that the chances of ending up, you know, in utterly incapacitated in a nursing home were pretty good. And the percentage, since I started working on this 10 years ago, the percentage of Americans over 65 in nursing homes has dropped from 4% to 2.5%. And, you know, and on and on and on. And the reason we don't know these things is because we live in a society that drowns it out. It is an ageist culture. Ageism, like sexism and racism, is a form of prejudice. It is stereotyping and discrimination on the basis of age. I think of it in terms of if any time we come to a judgment or an assumption about someone on the basis of how old we think they are, we are being ageist. And it works against younger people too. If someone says, "Well, how could you possibly know what you're talking about? You're too young." That is also an ageist assumption, and ageism affects us all the way along, although we live in such a youth-obsessed society that most of it is directed against older people, and you see it, but you see it especially for women who face the double whammy of ageism and sexism. My daughter-in-law has a friend. She's a model. So you can imagine, she's beautiful. She's 32. She doesn't have a partner at the moment. And she is terrified at the thought of the years ahead because she's getting old. Think about that. She's 30 years old. She's probably a third of the way through to feel that already some peak has passed, mm-hmm. and that she has less value mm-hmm. as a human being and as a woman in the world. Ageism is tremendously damaging, and we need to wake up to it.
Well, so a couple of things that you pointed out there. The last thing you were talking about, your daughter, and you had, I thought, a great depiction that I've never thought about, but it was, and you can correct me here because I may not paint
the
picture.
Don't worry, I
will. But it was basically a smiley face, and at the end of each of the tips of the smile, there was one side, it was old, and the other was young, mm-hmm. and then the middle is the midlife, and I thought it was fascinating to think that that maybe our ability to enjoy life or happiness in life, or I forgot the term you used, was bigger or better on the ends of the spectrum, but in the middle, sometimes it's frightening.
Hard.
And I hear that,
was
that you're saying,
I mean,
that.
It's called the U-curve of happiness. I love it when people say, well, that couldn't be, because it is honestly the best substantiated data out there. When I first heard it, I thought, oh, well, they can't be. They must have cornered two 80-year-olds and given them a cookie and said, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, that must be true if you're wealthy, or if you're healthy, or if you're married. Mm-hmm. The curve obtains across culture, across class, across marital status. It is a function of the way aging itself affects the brain.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, the fact that it seems so surprising is honestly an example of how brainwashed we are. And as I say in the talk, I didn't really believe, I felt better, and I believed that it was real, but I didn't really accept it until I learned the science behind it, mm-hmm. which is another ageist assumption I came into was, like, obviously it sucks to get older because, you know, because it's sad to be old, mm-hmm. and old age is depressing. And in fact, and another thing that seemed really unfair about it was that I imagined the shadow of the Grim Reaper, you know, looming closer and closer.
Scary.
And that's not the way it works. Older people don't want to die. They especially don't want to die in pain, but they are not preoccupied by it. They are not afraid of it. The knowledge that time is short does not fill us with dread. It makes us conscious of how we spend the time. And you see it, again, it's not necessarily a function of age. It is a function of the awareness that time is short, because you see it in younger people who have terminal conditions. We are more careful about how we spend our time, and we are more aware of living in the moment. And living in the moment, I mean, it's the fundamental of Buddhism, not that I'm a Buddhist, but, you know, is that we need to be here now, be present. Kids are always here now. That's why kids are kids. That's mm-hmm. what makes kids kids in a cognitive sense. And it is also something that not every older person, but that we have more and more access to as we age.
You know, Lucas, I was thinking about this as Ashton was just talking a little bit earlier, but ageism, you know, I've heard the term. I think a lot of us have heard the term. Maybe we don't know how to define it. We have a preconceived idea. But something you just mentioned, ageism could be maybe any time that we attach a stereotype to any age group. Is that what I heard
Absolutely.
You say? And I can think back, just while you were saying that, when you were talking about, you know, somebody's too young and they don't know how it is. When I first got in senior housing, 25 years old, probably had about the same beard I do right now. And I remember this older gentleman coming in, and he was going to be a resident. And he said, I don't think I can live here. You're way too young. You don't even have a razor. And so I felt that, and I thought, oh, you know, I haven't been stereotyped. I don't know how to run this place.
That's insulting.
It was for me at the time. And so,
unfortunately, he was right, though. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well, actually, he was exactly right. Now, in hindsight, I think, yeah, the razor and probably everything else. So I could learn a lot. But
I doubt it.
We've talked a lot about on this show that's only been going now for what a couple months, yeah. I think, or something like that. So about multi-generational housing, and how we hope that one of the many topics
that's
that we
great to hear.
That we that we talk about and we educate people on, which makes your topic so relevant to this as well, is bringing older and younger people together in a non-discriminatory housing format and programming format. So no matter whether you're a young person or old person, it's relevant to you.
People, age tells you almost nothing about a person. No. I mean, it's true that as we get older, we are less likely to be able to participate in extreme sports. But honestly, that's about it. I could be interested in bird watching or GoPros or boating or whatever it is that someone who's 30, 40 years younger than me could do. So in that sense, the idea that people, you know, have categories of interest that break down by age, it's just not true. You know, so it's incredibly important to make friends of all ages. And it is shocking how age segregated this country is. So it's fantastic that you're doing intergenerational housing, because of course people are going to make friends over who likes to play checkers or cook chili or hates the guy who makes that awful chili every Friday night, you know, whatever it happens to be. It's what's weird is the idea that age would be a barrier to common interest. That's prejudice,
yeah.
You know, and think, oh, that young person won't want to talk to me. Well, you know, unless he or she is really a jerk, they probably don't care, and they might even like the idea, and we're never going to know unless you sit down and check it out.
But it's fascinating that our culture has kind of created that, yeah. You know, atmosphere.
If aging is framed as a problem, we can be persuaded to buy stuff to fix it. And sure. If aging is medicalized like a disease, and it is not a disease, otherwise living would be a disease, then we can be persuaded that every gray hair is a problem, every wrinkle is a problem, and aging is not a problem or a disease. It is the universal human experience. It is a powerful, natural process that unites us all. And, you know, if it's so awful, how come no one actually wants to be any younger?
Yeah.
You know, people, we'd like to swap out the battered bits. You know, I would love my 18-year-old cartilage. But even people who haven't begun to think about this in a philosophical or political way, don't, when you give them the choice, say, no, I'm the sum of all my experiences. And I would never give that up. I had to work hard to get where I've gotten, and it's precious.
Right. So do away with the search for the fountain of youth.
Absolutely.
No.
So another interesting thing, I think I heard you say in your introduction this morning while we were enjoying your keynote, was that you did not intend to be where you are today, and like how that all transpired. So give us just a short version of how this all kind of came about.
It started as a blog about older people who work, and then that was boring. And then I floundered miserably for a couple of years, continuing to think. Part of my lizard brain said, you know, if you can't get somewhere with a project that makes baby boomers feel better about getting older, you are a moron. But I didn't know where to go with it, and I had to say to myself, look, if all I get out of this is that I feel so much better about my own late years, that's fantastic, and it has to be enough. And then I got invited to give a monologue at a theater festival, the theme of which was aging.
Okay.
Sponsored by a friend who hung out with me and listened to me mainly complain and just be really stumped and really very unhappy because I didn't know where to go. And she said, she has a theme every year, and when she picked aging, all her theater friends were like, ooh, no one's going to, you know, want to go, you're going to lose your subscribers. She tripled her subscriber base for the same reason that my work is getting traction, because we know that aging is different from mm-hmm. the way it's portrayed in the media. And even though the idea, for example, that age is a criterion for diversity is a new idea to most people, it's intuitively obvious, right? These are ideas. I just happen to be the first one to sort of call them out. It is ringing a bell. And not to mention the whole sort of global social justice picture, population aging is happening everywhere. It's here to stay. We need to get better individually and collectively at supporting people from birth to death. There's more life How do we make the most of it, and how do we help everyone have access to those opportunities?
That is so awesome. And I think, so this conference, you know, I'm sitting here thinking this, as you know, this is a very great place to start kind of spreading that, because you have influencers here in the design and thought leadership. And so to have you as the keynote speaker here, and I saw everyone's eyebrows raising.
It's fantastic that they acknowledged it. I mean, if it were, you know, if it were, if the issue were improving women's lives rather than improving older people's lives, think about the role of discrimination against women. Think mm-hmm. how central that idea would be mm-hmm. to all the things people were talking about, whether it's about workforce policy or the built environment sure. or policy in Washington.
Right.
Ageism is that central to everything around making the most of longer lives.
I love that. So as I shared with you briefly as we were introducing you to Bridge the Gap podcast, and so grateful that you would take a few minutes to talk with us, our kind of three big pillars are educating, informing, and influencing. So it's so great to have you here. Talk to us a little bit about your work. You're obviously speaking at a lot of these. You have blogs. You've got a great website. I was new to learning about it myself today. I hate to admit that.
I'll forgive you.
Yes, please forgive. But now I'm definitely a subscriber. So tell people like how they can keep up with you, and then tell us a little bit about your book.
Don't write a book. It's really awful. but it feels really good when you're done. I didn't want to write a book because I wrote one before and it was really awful to do it, but great when it's done. I thought, I'll be a modern author. I'll just blog and tweet. So it started as a blog, and the address is thischairrocks.com, which is also the name.
I love the name.
Of the book.
Yes.
Took a long time to come up with the title, too. And so I have, and at thischairrocks.com/blog, and it's all there on the homepage, mm-hmm. you can see I have been writing and thinking out loud in blog form for 11 years. It's all there. It's searchable by topic. So go on it and search for U-Curve, mm-hmm. and you'll see, for example, the U-Curve of Happiness, and you'll see the links. I also have a Q&A blog called Yo, Is This Ageist?, which is modeled on the pre-existing and fantastic site Yo, Is This Racist?, mm-hmm. which this guy started because we're uncomfortable talking about race. Mm-hmm. I started mine in frank imitation and admiration because ageism is such a new idea to people. We often don't know mm-hmm. what it looks like. Is something an example of ageism, or am I just being oversensitive or whatever? Good litmus test. If a similar comment on the basis of race or sex wouldn't pass muster, it's not okay.
True.
So that's, you can go to Yo Is This Ageist through my website or on its own. And I have a very active This Chair Rocks Facebook page where I'm constantly posting really good stuff about ageism. And it's, you know, there's more and more of it. I mean, it's really happening in the culture. And I'm also at This Chair Rocks on Twitter. And I did finally write a book because people said you have to write a book. So it's $20. It's got well over 100 five-star reviews on Amazon, and I self-published because age cooties, because publishers said, how will we sell it? How will we market it? To which, you know, well, you could sell it to everyone who's going to get older, but yeah. that would be a cheap shot because, honestly, these are new ideas, yeah. and there's so much outsized fear and prejudice around it mm-hmm. that people don't want to think about it. But as one of the slides from the talk is, the more you know, sure. the better it looks, but you have to be ready to look. And yeah. people have to come to that in their own time and their own way.
I love it. So thank you for taking time with us today. Lucas, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, you just seem like the type of person that the fact that they kind of told you no was probably even more set you up for even better success, because when you get told no, you seem like a person that just doubles down and makes it happen.
Kindred spirit.
You know, it's so interesting. It's the biggest canvas there is. And I don't like to write, but I love to think. And there's just, you can go off in any direction. It's the canvas us of how we move through life and interact with each other and institutions. So what could be more interesting?
Well, we're very grateful, EFA Conference, for Ashton, and we'll definitely connect with you in the show notes. And one of our big things is we want to continue the conversation after the podcast ends. We'll continue the conversation on our social accounts. So please, listeners, make sure that you write in and tell us what your questions are, and connect with Ashton, and we'll continue that conversation there. Another great podcast. Josh, thank you. Ashton, thank you. Safe travels back home.
Thanks.
And we'll connect with you and look forward to getting more from your book and your information.